It's time to head out on the front porch on KFRM. Grab your favorite drink, sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation on the front porch.
Welcome to On the Front Porch. I'm Tamara Wallace, and I'm visiting with Laura Hafner from Hays, Kansas. Laura farms along with her husband, Ryan, and two children in Sheridan County. She is the co-owner of High Plains Harvesting, a custom harvesting operation. Just recently, Laura just graduated from American Farm Bureau Federation's Partners in Advocacy Leadership PAL program. Welcome to On the Front Porch, Laura.
Hey, thanks so much for having me today, Tamara.
Laura, let's start at the beginning. Tell us about your childhood.
I spent most of my childhood growing up in rural communities. My dad was an agronomist, so we lived in locations that were ideal for his job. So most of my family's from Texas, but we later moved with my dad's job to Nebraska and spent several years there. And later we moved to Southwest Kansas, where he continued his agronomy work, and I grew up in Cimarron. So being able to grow up in rural America has a lot of benefits. We have great school systems. There's a lot of opportunities for youth to try lots of things, and I just really did have a great childhood.
And did you have a dream job as a kid?
You know, I think in second grade, I had an article in the paper when they do one of those, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I said I wanted to be the first woman Dallas Cowboy football player. Clearly, that did not happen for me, but I also always thought of myself maybe as being a teacher. But agriculture always triggered my interest, but I wasn't a farm kid. I was a rural kid. I was exposed to it through my dad's agronomy work. So that, as a child, that part was a little bit more cloudy. So ironically, though, as life would have it, I've been able to pursue both of those interests.
And tell me about high school.
So high school, as I said before, I graduated from Cimarron High School in Cimarron, Kansas. And at the time, we were a small 3A school, one of the smallest 3A schools in the state. And I think it really is a blessing to grow up in a small community. Everybody needs everybody to do all the things. And you're allowed to try many things. If you want to be in music, you can be in music. If you want to try out for sports and play sports, you can play sports. If you want to be in, you know, any of the clubs, you can do that. And I think by having that diverse offering, that diverse opportunity to try a lot of things, that really shaped and prepared me for, you know, some of the adventures I'd have later in life. But some of my favorite memories are definitely playing sports. I love sports. And those teams working together with those individuals, you know, that was some of the highlights of that time period of my life.
And Laura, what were some of those sports that you played and activities that you participated in?
I'd play about any sport that they'd let me. So at the time we had volleyball that was available for girls in the fall. I loved volleyball, played basketball, did track, and even played some softball in the summertime. And gosh, we had just a great group of women that were extremely driven to do their best to be on those teams, and I just learned a lot from that period of time. I even went on and ran 1 year of track at K-State. So just learning the discipline, learning the teamwork, that really helped shape, you know, some of my characteristics to be able to do some of the jobs that I've done today.
Well, running on the track at K-State, that was probably a special memory. Did you have any other special memories from those activities?
Like I said, we had women who tried extremely hard, and some of my favorite memories are getting to participate in state track. So I'd always dreamed that. I don't know where I even came up with this. When I lived in Nebraska, the street that we lived on, you know, we drove by the high school a lot, and I grew up driving by the track and watching those older students that you looked up to running around the track doing practice. And for some reason, that really piqued my interest. And at a young age, I had a goal to go to state track all 4 years of my high school career, and that happened for me. And so whether that was running individual events or running with relays with some of my teammates, just the hard work ethic and seeing that pay off by the end of the season, the people that you met at track meets, you really had an opportunity to network and meet people. And those are some of the fun memories that I have. And some of the people that I met over the years with sports, you know, in the High Plains League there in Southwest Kansas, you know, I still keep in touch or we're acquaintances even to this day, years and years later.
And did you have a favorite coach or teacher in high school?
Oh, gosh, that's a tough question. We were so lucky. This sounds like it was really idyllic. But we just really had a great group of instructors and teachers during that time period who really had our best interests in mind. And I hate to list any of the favorites because I'm afraid I'd miss somebody. But, you know, all my coaches were just really positive and really both on and off the court played a key role. You could tell that they really cared about it. It was more than just the game. They were really concerned with who we were becoming and who we would be and really trying to raise people of character with hard work ethics and integrity. And I just am forever grateful. Looking back now, I realize, you know, teaching can be really a thankless job and a profession, you know, if you're looking at it financially, it is not exactly the most lucrative position. And to consider all the hours that those people invested in me and my friends, it just blows my mind that they were willing to do that for us.
And did you have a job while you were in high school?
Yeah, in high school, in the summertime, I mowed ditches for the county. So it was fun. We had mostly an all-entire girls team of ditch mowers. So we were in the tractors and we had the mowers behind us, and yeah, we spent the majority of our time mowing those ditches throughout the summer. We even got in on some construction, like roadway construction as well. So that was a lot of fun that they had the confidence in us, because that was kind of still of a time that, you know, women in agriculture or women doing quote-unquote, you know, man jobs, that was still a little bit, you know, shaky during those times. And the fact that they had all-girl crews and they had the confidence in us to do that and knew that we'd do a good job, you know, that was a real confidence booster.
And what did you do after high school?
So after high school, I went on to Kansas State University. And as I said before, I walked on the track team and I ran 1 year there until I got hurt and I realized it was just time to hang up my spikes and maybe pursue some other interests. But that, when one door closes, another door opens, and I really found my people and my interest in the Wheat State Agronomy Club. I was a member there in the agronomy department at K-State, and the instructors and advisors we had for that organization, you know, were incredible. Kind of like I've said before in high school, I've just been really fortunate over the years to have people who were willing to invest in us, to see the best in us, even when you're learning and growing. Sometimes your college years as you're learning are not the most flattering. But they were there for us to help guide us and shape us, and they could really see what the end product could be. With Wheat State Agronomy Club, it really opened the door. I'd done some traveling, you know, with my family, but because of the professional organization that we belonged to, SASES, at the time, we were able to travel all across the country together. We went to places like Denver, Seattle, Salt Lake City, Indianapolis, Michigan. I believe we went to there's others that I'm missing here, but just the learning to travel together, learning how to engage in a professional setting like that, learning how to network, learning how to test your boundaries with things maybe you were scared to do, like doing a public poster presentation. All of those were such great memories and really helped me, you know, as I pursued my career in agriculture.
And you have 2 degrees from 2 different colleges, is that correct?
I do. I have my undergrad's in education and a minor in agronomy, and then for my master's degree, I have a master's in biological sciences from Clemson.
And did you work in college?
You know, when I was in track, that was basically a full-time job just because of the time commitment that between your classes and sports. Later, I did do some temporary work for the bookstore. That's back when we actually had a physical bookstore, and you sold and bought back books. So I did that during the busy season. And I even did a little bit of time in the agronomy department working for the administrator there.
And what did you do after college?
So after college, I started out as a trainee for cropland genetics, and that was a temporary role that I was in for a summer in that traineeship, and we were on the answer plot crew. So I reported to my boss, and he had a territory that spanned multiple states, and we were responsible for planting and maintaining those answer plots, which at the time were to kind of serve twofold. There was some research going on there, but also it was to educate the public around some of the different varieties that they had in their, you know, their crop lineup at that time. But that was a fantastic job. And it's funny how sometimes you don't realize at the time that something is preparing you for the future. So Phil Ramsell was my boss at the time, and he was just incredible. He truly allowed me to grow and never told me no. He learned that I wanted to get my CDL, and he thought that was great. They needed someone to help, so he helped line up. You know, I went to CDL school in Iowa, and I had a lot of pressure because I had to pass that week to be able to bring a trailer back to Nebraska for us. But we spent that spring and summer traveling across multiple states, planting, growing together as a team. And, you know, he was just really integral in really empowering us to try new things, to give us responsibilities and letting us rise up. And he was just a great boss. Not a whole lot ruffled his feathers. I think he knew what he was working with young people in college, and there was some give and take there. And I just really admired his management style, and it really truly shaped who I am today when I'm having to help manage the crew that we have.
And tell us about your family.
So I'm married to my husband, Ryan Hoffner, and we have two children. They're elementary school age, and they're a huge part of what we do every day, but I think we'll probably talk about that here in a little bit.
I'm Tamara Wallace talking with Laura Hoffner from Hays, Kansas. We have learned about her growing up. We are going to take a short break, but we will be right back. We will learn about her teaching experiences. Back on the front porch, I'm Tamara Wallace visiting with Laura Hoffner from Hays, Kansas. We have learned about her growing up. Now we are going to learn about her teaching experiences. But first, Laura, tell us about your farm.
My husband and I started farming in 2009. Ryan would be the fourth generation on his family farm, and he's the youngest of seven. He's a late in life child, so at the point that we came back, his parents had already were in the process of retiring and had written things out. And so we essentially started from scratch. They had sold the equipment and most of the things that you needed for the farm. And we started out that year, and we've learned so much through trial and error. We've, you know, switched the farm. Originally, it was a conventional. My late father-in-law was doing the technology that he had available at the time, but we decided to switch things over to no-till and have seen huge leaps and bounds over time with our soil management and conservation practices there. We farm in northwest Kansas in the Sheridan and Gove County areas, and our primary crops there are small grains or corn. So we kind of have a corn and wheat rotation, and it's a dry land operation.
And your farm is just one of the many hats you wear. Laura, you advocate for agriculture by teaching. Tell us about your agriculture adjunct faculty position at Fort Hays State University.
Yeah, so several years ago, I had the opportunity to hop in an adjunct role when they were looking to expand their online offerings. So I teach an entry-level crop science class for them currently. And it's just been a joy to be able to work with students. And typically online, the majority of the students I have are non-traditional, meaning that they are seeking their education maybe from their current place of residence, so they're off campus. And I did my master's degree online, and I think that really helped shape a passion and a drive to really help students be successful where we're at. You know, not everybody is able to go on campus, even if they wish they could. So I work to try to help meet those students where they're at and try to help them be as successful as possible in that online format. But being able to teach about agriculture is key. And I think something that we take for granted is even those of us in agriculture who live it and breathe it and do it every single day, we still have a lot to do. So trying to find creative ways to teach in that online capacity, maybe finding facts that are little known or resources that can help them in their daily life, is something that really drives me.
And tell us about when you were a science teacher.
Yeah, so we talked earlier about my first job out of college was working for cropland genetics in that answer plot capacity. Then I worked for Syngenta Crop Protection and had a sales territory, which I loved. And I loved meeting the people in that role and working with a diverse group of business operations across that territory. But at some point, I just felt the call to go back into teaching, and it was hard to explain. And my first teaching job was out in Southwest Kansas. I kind of went home, essentially, back to the High Plains League where I'd grown up. But I was teaching out in Johnson, not Johnson County, Johnson City, out in Stanton County. And gosh, I mean, so I learned so much that first round. You know, as a first-year teacher, I had gotten back into it. I was teaching, you know, biological science at the high school level, and goodness, you have a lot to learn your first year. And those students were so patient with me, and they were just wonderful. They were just good kids. Sadly, I was only there 1 year. I got engaged that year and, you know, married and moved away after that. But there's something like extra special about your first class, and I still think about those students often, and I know that they've all grown up, and many of them have families of their own, and it's kind of been fun, you know, to see how they've grown and developed over the years. Later, when we moved to Salina, I did a middle school science teaching role there, and that was a lot of fun. Being a large school district was completely different than how I grew up or my previous teaching experiences, and provided some opportunity to team teach with other teachers, but also, you know, some challenges when you're working with, you know, a huge school. So I've been really fortunate, though, to work with some great colleagues and students over the years.
And who is your mentors for wanting to teach?
You know, I think that dates back to, you know, my childhood. I had really great teachers growing up, you know, both the primary and secondary levels, even in college. But also my grandpa, I would say he was a professor at Texas A&M University, and he spoke so highly of his students, and he had won some teaching awards and things like that over the years. And there was something about him and how he handled, you know, his educational experiences professionally with his students that really encouraged me to do this. Sadly, you know, I was so excited to be able to get into the adjunct role there at Fort Hays State University. And I had just told him, and I was working on that class, and it was fun to be able to exchange that. And sadly, he passed away that first semester that I was teaching. And, you know, looking back, I just wish now that we had the opportunity to be able to exchange some stories and grow together like that, because he was a huge influence.
And tell us about your advocacy in mental health for Farm Bureau.
So, yeah, teaching is not the only way that I've been able to have advocacy opportunities for agriculture. Here in the last several years, mental health is another subject that I've helped champion, and Kansas Farm Bureau has given me an avenue to do so. Because of the experiences I've had, both with my careers when I worked in agriculture early on, and even serving in rural communities through teaching, and currently now with our farm and custom harvesting business, you know, you see a lot of things, and you get to have some really great discussions, and sometimes very private discussions with people, and you learn that we're all facing the same things, and things are tough out there. And Farm Bureau right now is doing a wonderful job, both in-house and working with other agricultural institutions like KDA and AFBF, to be able to have those resources, and I shouldn't use those acronyms, Kansas Farm Bureau, Kansas Department of Agriculture, and American Farm Bureau Federation are what I was alluding to there. But being able to put resources out there at people's fingertips, helping them realize they're not alone. We are all fighting this battle together, and there's no shame and no issue. Like, it's okay to not be okay, but we have to find ways to get help and improve. Because if we're going to have healthy communities and healthy farms and ranches, we have to be healthy ourselves. And there's no shame in that. So one of the things I found interesting and I tried to provide when I was teaching on campus, I've done both on campus and online work for Fort Hays, is I had a mental health professional come in at one point. And the beauty about Will Sutterheim, he came and talked to my class, is that he was an individual who had grown up in the 80s and he truly understood what we were facing in agriculture. And he did an exercise with us one day that was really cool with my class. And he said, write down all the stresses that you're facing in agriculture. And so we did this. In the class, we wrote down, they were writing, we were thinking. And then we exchanged that information, and everybody kind of felt like, oh, me too. I, you know, those are things that we've faced as well. And then he said, now pick how many of those things that you can control. Like, you truly can control them. And then the room kind of went silent, you know, silent as they kind of went back through their list. And the reality was, at the end of the day, there was only one thing that we could control, and that one thing was ourselves. It's how we handled ourselves in life and how we responded to other things. So sometimes I think we are really good about pulling up our bootstraps. We're extremely resilient in agriculture, but sometimes because we are so resilient and because we work so hard, we fail to realize just how much is out of our control and just how much that can play into our mental health, whether it's policies that are made or weather or input costs increasing, interest rates, family dynamics. I mean, that's a real issue on the farm. How do you navigate a business within family and then still remain family? The list just goes on and on. So trying to find ways for our farmers, whether that's resources or even peer-to-peer counseling. American Farm Bureau has a great app right now that involves that. Also, resources of how do you find a counselor that truly gets you, like Will does, who's currently doing some great work educating the next generation of counselors, hopefully that will understand rural needs. Kansas Farm Bureau is just going to release a sticker campaign that has some valuable resources on there with some real flashy stickers to hopefully get some resources in the hands of those who need it. There's just so much that we can do. And I think one thing, too, as fellow citizens, as fellow farmers, we have to end the stigma. We have to be able to come alongside. Let's not perpetuate, you know, some people's struggle through gossip or, you know, conversations behind the back. We really need to find ways to work together and build each other up, because we are in this together, and the survival of our communities and the health of our communities and our operations depend on us all doing that together.
And I'm Tamara Wallace talking with Laura Hoffner from Hays, Kansas. We have learned about her teaching experiences and her advocacy in mental health for Farm Bureau. On that note, we're going to take a short break, but we will be right back. We will learn about her custom harvesting operation, High Plains Harvesting, that she is co-owner of. I'm Tamara Wallace, visiting with Laura Hoffner from Hays, Kansas. We have learned about her teaching experiences. Now we are going to find out about her custom harvesting operation, High Plains Harvesting, that she is co-owner of. Laura, tell us about High Plains Harvesting.
So High Plains Harvesting started for us in 2012, and it all began with a phone call that I remember well. I was in teaching school one day, and I was on my lunch break, and my husband called to tell me that the crew that he grew up harvesting with, he spent a lot of his high school and college years in his summer job was to be on a custom harvesting business. So they were retiring, and they were offering him, you know, an opportunity to buy the business if he so chose. And I knew in that moment, no matter what I said, I had to say yes. Ryan's dream was to be an entrepreneur, and he's good at that. And I knew that he would always wonder, what if we didn't pursue this? So in 2012, we scrambled to kind of shift. We had just made some adjustments with our farm. We had just gotten back into cattle. You know, doing a harvest crew was not on our radar at that point in time, but somehow we pulled the business plan together and got some funding. And that year we had to downsize the crew. They were running three combines, I believe, and we had to start on the road with two machines. And man, what a difference it is from being on a harvest crew, or in my case, being on an answer plot crew as one of the team members helping, to transitioning to be in more manager or business owning role. We have a lot to learn, you know, and we've learned a lot of that through trial and error. And, but yeah, so the first year was 2012, and we had some jobs that stayed with us. We had to go find some jobs. I remember distinctly making phone calls that summer to help try to fill in some work. I was making phone calls to every grain elevator business, you know, ag-related business, just to try to find some acres. And, man, it was tough. But over the years, we've stuck with it, and we've been able to really grow our business.
And do you have a specific job on the harvest crew?
You know, my job as co-owner and mom, I'm the harvest mom. So, you know, as a mom, no different than at home, you pretty much do whatever job you need to do at the time just to make things flow. That's kind of how it works for me on the harvest crew. My primary role is probably more the clerical side at this point. My husband and I decided that, you know, I probably wouldn't be in a machine full time since we have young kids still at home, and we want to balance the business and their childhood. However, I do love being in a combine. That's probably my favorite place to be. So if someone's ever sick or needs to take some time off, or, you know, if we're shuffling equipment around, we're short a person while we do that, I can hop in a machine and help out. So like I said, I have my CDL. I could drive truck, tractor, combine. But basically my job is just to fill in wherever is necessary in addition to the book work that I do.
And where do you harvest at?
So we start each summer at Texas, and we hopscotch along the Midwest to the Canadian border. So we harvest in Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Colorado, sometimes in Nebraska, and then we jump up and harvest in Montana and in North Dakota.
And what crops do you harvest?
Our primary focus early on this season is wheat, but the further north we get, the more diversified those crops are. So by the time we get to Montana or the Dakotas, you know, there's crops like lentils, canola, field peas, there's safflower, so some different things like that in addition to wheat and barley. And then we return to Kansas in the fall, and we harvest fall crops. So that could be anything from corn to grain sorghum would be the primary two crops. But, you know, we've also done pinto beans and soybeans, basically whatever needs to be done that we can run through our headers.
And tell us about your writing for All Abroad Wheat Harvest.
Yeah, I've been writing for the High Plains Journal now. Last summer completed my ninth season with that program. And All Aboard Wheat Harvest is an advocacy program, if you will, that features several harvesting families and our journeys across the Midwest. So we write several articles and include, you know, videos or photography with those articles. It's found both online, so you can see all the pictures on their online format, which is just if you typed in allaboardharvest.com, you would find that program there. And also it's featured in the print edition of the High Plains Journal as well.
And what are the opportunities that Custom Harvest has done for you?
You know, I think Custom Harvesting has provided many opportunities. It's a very unique lifestyle because we have our life here at home, but we also have our life on the road. And because we're on the road, we're in multiple different communities, and we've built relationships with communities. You know, people in church recognize us year to year. It's like, oh, you're back. And, you know, and they welcome us. And that's really fun to have that relationship, even if it's only one or two Sundays a year. People at local businesses, at dealerships, at the fuel store, at the repair place, even the grocery store, local businesses, it's really had a great opportunity to be able to just meet people. Also with our crew, being able to have, you know, we'll have over 20 employees this year on our team working for us, and they come from all over the U.S. and world. They really bring the world to us, and in their cultures and the diversity. It's so fun to learn from them. My kids don't know another life where there's not people with different languages or different food preferences. It's all stuff that they've been able to learn too. So just the people side of things has been incredible. And also just the places you visit. It's truly the road less traveled. Being in some of the last wild places is kind of what I call it. Watching the thunderstorms roll across the prairie as you're sitting there in the wheat field with the pressure to try to get it all out before the storm hits. We also try to take advantage of national parks and state parks and museums on our rain days or days that we have off. To truly just take in the whole scope of the experience is really important, not only for my family, but being able to provide that, bring the world to my crew members as well.
And what are the challenges with custom harvesting?
You know, right now, our biggest challenge is labor. If we can't get labor right, if we don't have a good team with us, we don't have to worry about anything else. A tough thing with labor, because we're a seasonal business, we can't employ people to that scale year-round. So trying to find seasonal labor from the April-May timeframe through October, November, December, depending on the season and how it goes, you know, that's just, it's kind of a tough, strange niche market in there of people who want employment opportunities. You know, people who are looking for adventure, people who are interested in agriculture, this is a great job for them. You get to see a lot of the world and meet a lot of people along the way. But some other challenges over the years have been regulations, rules and regulations that, you know, maybe make it hard to cross state lines, you know, with wide loads and different things like that. So just making sure that you're staying abreast of those is important. You know, during COVID, the supply chain issues were plaguing everybody. So just making sure we had the parts that we were needed to, you know, be able to do our jobs in a time-efficient manner. And input costs, I mean, no different than farmers and ranchers. We've seen our inputs skyrocket the last several years. So we face many of the same challenges that other agricultural businesses do.
You've mentioned your children. How do they like harvesting?
They like harvest for the most part. And the older they get, the more involved they get. I think it becomes, you know, fun for them too. Our crew members become like family. Like, we are literally living and working together day in and day out from that May to, you know, fall time frame. They get to know the guys. A lot of our team members return to us year after year, so it's fun to see those relationships blossom. But it's also, they love being able to see the world. I mean, they've been to Glacier National Park and Yellowstone and some different places that maybe we wouldn't have been able to visit had we not been passing through those areas or harvesting. And last year, you know, we want to make sure that they're exploring their own talents and interests as well, and they really like sports. We enrolled them in sports programs or sports camps. They went to basketball camp in Texas and met new friends down there. So they also go to school in western Kansas in a small community when we're harvesting in the fall. It really has opened the world to them and made them resilient, because some days aren't easy. You know, owning a business as a family can be tough. You know, they're exposed to some, you know, tough concepts. They know what it's like and what it means when we have drought or a hailstorm takes out some of the crops. So sometimes it hurts my heart a little bit. They might be a little too wise as far as the business goes. Maybe they've had some realities that they've had to face that their peers haven't. But on the flip side, they've also had the opportunity to travel and meet people that they wouldn't get to do if they weren't in this business.
And have you always wanted to be involved in custom harvesting?
Custom harvesting was never on my radar. Not that there's anything wrong with it. It wasn't an opportunity I ever thought would be on my path. I had some friends who did it growing up, and it seemed like, you know, they had some amazing adventures, and there was some pros and cons, and, you know, I knew about it a little bit that way, but no, this was nothing that I had ever considered. But sometimes God, or, you know, the path your life takes, maybe there's a bigger purpose or things you're supposed to do, and so sometimes I think it's a good thing that we don't always know what's to come. And, you know, what opportunities we might face.
And tell us about all the people that you've met.
You know, we know people at the elevators. We know people at the local churches. My kids go to school in western Kansas in the fall. You know, one really cool story that we have was, there's a grocery store in western Kansas, and he knows that our guys come in late, and they go in the morning. He opens up pretty early. But he even was willing to give them his personal cell phone, that if they needed to come in for them after hours to help, if they needed some necessities or something that, you know, they couldn't grab at another time, he was willing to open that up for them. We had a lady who just retired in Oklahoma at one of the cafes. She loved when our guys came in and would just, gosh, make them feel so welcome and so at home. And she would make over them and sometimes send them home with some extra goodies. The days are long when you're on harvest and you're far from home. And so when communities truly welcome you and see that as a mutually beneficial relationship, they need us to harvest. It's important for their businesses. And we need them, too, to be successful. Those relationships really just sweeten the deal along the way.
And in regards to what a typical day would be like for custom harvesting, it's a long day. Can you tell us a little more about that?
You know, the funny thing is, there's a lot of days that are similar, but I don't know that any 2 days are the same. The field conditions, the weather conditions, the location of where we're at, the state, everything is just a little bit different. So, but to generalize that, typically the morning's going to start out with some sort of servicing if they didn't do it the night before, you know, making sure that everything's greased and oiled up and it has fuel, making sure things are blown off if it's time to do that, just to make sure the equipment's in good working order. And then typically, once the wheat dries, we have to wait for that. Some days we can get right into the field. Some days we have to wait. It could be hours. It could even be mid-afternoon before we start. And then they'll typically harvest for either until the moisture comes back up in the field or the elevator location closes. So we have a diverse group of guys. Some of them run combines. Some of them run the grain carts. And some of them are hauling the wheat or the grain out of the field into the local, where if it's a bin or a local elevator, and doing it all again. And then on rain days are great days to catch up on equipment maintenance, laundry, and even a lot of guys will just take that opportunity to go travel, go to do something different. We had some team members one year had followed the sitcom. They were from South Africa, and they'd followed the sitcom Dallas. And so they went to the Metroplex and saw where that had been located. Some of them have gone to a golf tournament. Others have rented cars and, you know, gone to national parks and things like that. So we really do try to encourage, you know, some of the fun, too, when we're off.
And on those rainy days, you mentioned also you get to go to parks. And what would be probably your favorite place you've seen?
Oh, gosh, that's just so hard for me. I really do enjoy all of it. Glacier National Park, I thought that would maybe be a place that was overrated. Just you see the pictures, you hear people talk about it, the way it's advertised. Mm-hmm. That is one place I feel like is not overrated. Just the absolute sheer size of the mountain range and just the beauty of the place is incredible. But on the other hand, we've also seen some like places that aren't advertised. One time we had to stop on the side of the road in this little town, just, I mean, literally a post office and a couple houses. And we started talking with this gentleman, and he invited us in, and it turns out he had his own, like, personal museum and collection of Western artifacts and some things that were all rural-related, and he gave us this personal tour of his indoor museum that you would have never guessed was there from the road. So we just had a combination of interesting little happenstance events like that, you know, all the way up to things that, you know, everybody's seen advertised, like national parks or state parks.
I'm Tamara Wallace talking with Laura Hoffner from Hays, Kansas. We have learned about her custom harvesting operation, High Plains Harvesting, that she is co-owner of. We are going to take a short break. When we come back, we will learn about her graduating from American Farm Bureau Federation's Partners in Advocacy Leadership PAL program. Back on the front porch, I'm Tamara Wallace visiting with Laura Hoffner from Hays, Kansas. We have learned about her custom harvesting operation, High Plains Harvesting, that she is co-owner of. Now we are going to find out about graduating from American Farm Bureau Federation's Partners in Advocacy Leadership PAL program. Laura, tell us about your involvement with the Kansas Farm Bureau.
So Farm Bureau is a great organization that allows you to be involved on local on a lot of levels. So I'm currently involved with our local Ellis County Farm Bureau Board. And I also am the Women's Leadership Chair for the Kansas Farm Bureau Women's Leadership Committee. And with that role, I have a part as a member at large on the Kansas Farm Bureau Board of Directors.
And tell us about your first YF&R conference.
You know, that was kind of a unique way that I fell into that. We had just gone through some life changes. We had moved. I was a new mom. And my brother was working at Washington, D.C. at the time. And I think kind of sensed that I was needing to kind of find something for me or kind of get back into the swing of things after all those life changes. And he said, hey, I think there's this conference that they have. I know someone up here who's involved in Farm Bureau. I think you might like it. You should look into that. So the short story is I made a few phone calls, and our local person here who as our county coordinator, she was glad that I was interested, and I was shocked that she offered me essentially a scholarship to go to this thing, sight unseen. She had never met me from Adam, and so we went to our first conference, and I was just really impressed by the effort this organization made to really involve the young people and to provide programming, also in networking and socialization opportunities for its youngest members. There was a great, you know, programming, what was technical, or maybe some of it was more just everyday living. There was a huge variety and something for everyone. And after that, I was hooked and I wanted to be a part of it.
And tell us about your blog, Under the Flyover Sky.
So Under the Flyover Sky is just kind of my own little, I call it my love letter to the prairie. I'm just really passionate about the rural places out here and the places less traveled. I think sometimes we're overlooked here in the flyover country, and there's flyover, you know, is given a name for a reason. And I just want to celebrate the good things. There's a lot of beauty out here. There's a lot of amazing people who are doing awesome things and are extremely resilient, and we take very good care of our own. And we're also feeding the world. If it wasn't for the farmers and ranchers, how else are we going to get food in the grocery stores? So it's just kind of a place where I jot down some thoughts, and I hopefully along the way that maybe encourage people to see the goodness that is truly rural America.
And are you involved with the U.S. Custom Harvesters Association?
We are. The U.S. Custom Harvesters is an organization similar to other agricultural organizations that advocate for their cause, and in this case, it's the Custom Harvesters. So my husband recently completed a stint in the last several years of being on their board, and we attend their annual meetings and appreciate the work that they're doing to advocate for the needs of custom harvesters.
And tell us about the American Farm Bureau Federation's Partners in Advocacy Leadership PAL program.
Yes, so several years ago I was invited to apply to this program, and it's a program that they call it an executive level leadership training that really helps prepare you to strengthen your advocacy skills for agriculture. And because advocacy is something I'm passionate about, this seemed like a logical next step when it was proposed to me. So PAL is a program, it lasts approximately 2 years and has four different modules, and they're going to prepare you in certain capacities to be the best advocate you can be for agriculture. So the first module involved us going to New York City, and we had a focus specifically on how do you work with the media to tell your story. And there's lots of intense training that goes with this. We do lots of mock interviews, pretending that we're on, you know, camera or on radio, or even in print. We visited the Wall Street Journal when we were there to learn more about how they interview folks and how they look for stories. PepsiCo also offered us some key insight on how they communicate to their stakeholders. So all of that was about media and how you work with them and essentially team up to tell our story of agriculture. The next module then was Washington, D.C., where we focused a lot on policy and how do you work alongside policymakers to advocate for change or for policy that's necessary to allow us to do what we need to do out here in rural America to really help feed the world. Next was St. Louis. We met there at Bayer and had stakeholder engagement. So what does it look like when we're considering our messaging around and communicating with and finding common ground with our stakeholders? So in our case, that would be like consumers. And finally, there was a global component as well. The focus of our PAL, all of our modules centered around climate change, and all of our scenarios and mock interviews was around that topic. And so we went to Chile and learned about agriculture down there and their different policies within the government. They've been undergoing a serious drought. It's well over a decade now, so we were hoping to learn a little bit more about how they've mitigated that and challenges that they've faced with that, you know, climate change down there. And then finally, you graduate, and that's the last one. But extremely great program. It really challenges you. I would equate it to similar to like a college class. There's a lot of homework that you have to do to go along with it. It stretches you, but I can tell it's made me a better advocate. And just the relationships that I made with my teammates were relationships that I hope will last a lifetime.
Sounds like a very great program for anyone that wants to advocate in agriculture.
It is, and I would highly recommend this program or any other leadership program that maybe is available through organizations both locally or, you know, through other agricultural organizations. I know it's really hard to take time away from the farm, but those relationships you make and the skills that you gain while you're in those programs, I guarantee you won't regret it. You'll want to find a way to make that happen.
And tell us about your recent trip to Washington, D.C.
Yeah, recently, American Farm Bureau invited me with four other producers to come to Washington for a labor fly-in, and we had the opportunity to share our stories about how we're experiencing, you know, what we're experiencing in regards to labor on our farm. So we were very diverse. There was folks that grew leafy greens, things that you would eat in your salad, you know, on your salad plate. people who did orchards, asparagus growers, and I was a little bit different myself with the custom harvesting aspect. But our commonality there was if we don't get the labor right, we will not be in business. And so our specific focus was the H-2A labor program. And because some of us have real seasonal labor, it can be very difficult to find, you know, to find local local help, especially in Western Kansas, in our example, where we're already dealing with a low population and extremely low unemployment rate. So we're all competing for the same applicant pool. But also, in our case and some of the other producers, the additional challenge can be when you're looking at seasonal help and not year-round help. How do you fill those needs when you can't maybe find, you know, local team members? We have to have programs that are viable to help fill those roles, and one of those methods is the H-2A program.
And Laura, do you have any upcoming events with the Farm Bureau?
We do. So April 8th, the Women's Leadership Committee is going to be meeting, and we are focusing on Ag Safety that day. So we're teaming up with MKC, the Mid-Kansas Co-op, and they have graciously agreed to help host us that day, and they're going to provide some farm safety training. Hopefully we'll have some additional information about that soon, about when exactly that is, but we would be opening that up to, it doesn't have to be just women, it could be women and men who are interested in some of the farm safety aspects there. So that'll be coming up in May. Check out Kansas Farm Bureau's social media channels. There should be some announcements there. And if you are a member of Kansas Farm Bureau, maybe reach out to your county coordinator to see if they have received any updates there. So that'd be two ways to find out. Also, the Women's Leadership Committee has been engaging in a Lunch and Learn series. We just finished one here in March about mental health. And in May, we'll be having another one. You can tune in from anywhere over your lunch hour. You could be out, you know, eating in the tractor, whatever, and tune in. And we'll specifically be talking about some key things around farm safety, which I think is a timely message as we really gear up here in the planting season and even preparing for harvest, make sure that we're keeping our loved ones and our team members safe.
And do you have any goals with the Farm Bureau group?
You know, we continue to work on really sending that mental health message. That's one, making sure that we are resilient and making sure that people have the resources they need to stay healthy, not only physically, but more, you know, also equally importantly, mentally. So Women's Leadership is, and Farm Bureau as a whole, that's just, we just help with that, are committed to really helping keep our members, you know, safe and healthy in that capacity and giving them the resources they need and really trying to help end the stigma around the mental health.
Tamara Wallace here on the front porch talking with Laura Hoffner from Hayes, Kansas. We have learned about her farm and custom harvesting business where she wears many hats, High Plains Harvesting. Laura's love for agriculture shows by her farm, her family, custom harvesting business, college instructor at Fort Hays State University, and involvement with the American Farm Bureau Federation, and her advocacy in mental health with the Farm Bureau. Laura and her husband Ryan are making a difference in not only agricultural sector, but the legacy they will leave to their two children. I have had the most pleasure speaking with Laura Hoffner. Thank you, Laura, for joining us for On the Front Porch and to all who joined our conversation.
Thank you so much.